This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Now here's a look at what's coming up on the John Oakley Show podcast.
But the teachers want the kids to pay attention. It's as simple as that. It's not that complicated. Don't use the phones.
When a teacher thinks there's a need for technology, they will allow it, and I will respect their judgment. But I want families to know that we will back the teachers and the principals and the school boards when they enforce the policy.
I would give a kid a cigarette before I gave him a cell phone.
It's a great day for a podcast. Once again, here he is, John Oakley.
Hey, good afternoon. What a great day for talk radio. Just heard the premier in there referencing the ban on cell phones in classrooms right across the province. That was announced today by Minister Lecce, whom we also heard, said, you know, this is a policy that needs to be enacted so that students can spend the instructional time really focused on schoolbook learning. And I totally understand and support that. I mean, I just don't. The only problem I have is in the implementation and how this will work in practical terms if the teachers are going to be the ones that will have to implement this. And it could lead to placing them in a precarious position, as we've seen in certain instances, stateside primarily, where there have been teachers punched in the face, pepper sprayed, even beaten unconscious, trying to take away students' cell phones. Somebody who understands really what is at the base of all of this is Nicholas Cardaris. He authored the book Glow Kids, How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids. He's a psychologist, an expert on mental health and addiction, and he's also just recently written the book Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity. Dr. Cardaris, I appreciate you joining us here on The Oakley Show. Good afternoon.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate being on the show.
Well, boy, you're my go-to here because we've had our Minister of Education earlier today announce a ban on cell phones in schools, amongst other things. Obviously, you support the policy, do you not?
Yeah, I think it's a great policy. You bring up some very valid points about who's going to enforce it logistically, because obviously it should be at the school-wide level, not at the classroom-wide level, because of the reasons that you mentioned at the beginning, because you don't want the teachers to act as the phone police because of you know, we've had incidents of students acting out. So it has to be district-wide, school-wide. You know, I'm in New York. When Michael Bloomberg was mayor of New York City, we had a ban on schools throughout the whole entire New York City school system, which is the largest school system in the country. So it's possible, but it needs to be uniform.
Well, you know, when we cite these instances where kids have, you know, obviously shown all kinds of reactions and responses to the point of punching teachers in the face, physically accosting them, beating one unconscious. I saw that another one pepper sprayed. So what's really at the root of that, that kind of a response, a reaction to having their cell phone taken away?
Well, it's very similar to taking away the drug from a drug addict. You know, I'm an addiction psychologist. I've worked, you know, I started my career as a substance addictions professional clinician working, running rehabs and treatment programs. And I run the treatment program now with digital addiction, and you get the very same types of aggressive emotional responses because you're taking away someone's, you know, their the thing that they're addicted to. But the thing that's, I think, really critical and why I think this new law is important is because the research now is unequivocal in terms of how much harm is happening from a depression, anxiety. We know all those issues that are happening, the spike in adolescent suicides and all that. There's also a pedagogical educational component. There was one study on point to this issue from the London School of Economics from a few years back, and they looked at taking phones out of the classrooms with 40,000 students, and they saw a 6% increase in standardized test scores amongst mainstream students and a 12% increase in test scores amongst special needs and at-risk students. So they had said the best way to reduce the achievement gap, get the distracting phones out of the classroom. So you have test scores going up. You have mental health improvement. It's a no-brainer if done effectively. The main people that have opposed the initiatives here in the States have been the parents. The parents have a concern or a fear that if there's a school shooting, how can I contact little Johnny or little Susie? You don't seem to have those same problems in Canada, but the parents are some of the biggest opponents of removing schools from the classrooms at times.
So, again, Dr. Nicholas Cardaris is with a psychologist, an expert on mental health and addiction. And so the book is Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity. Before I get to the ways of restoring our sanity, you know, is it possible to use these phones in a responsible fashion? I'm kind of curious if it's, you know, the students who are using maybe TikTok exclusively are distinct from others who might be more responsible in its usage. Have you broken it down that, let's say, granularly?
Yeah, I think if you look at it, and I think it's a fair analogy to look at substance addiction parallels. In the continuum of substances, there are some substances that are more problematic than others, right? Cannabis is less problematic than crystal meth. So you might have some digital experiences are less addicting or mind-shaping. You know, they're all brain-altering and mind-shaping, but some more toxic than others. But the main issue here is age appropriateness. Driving a car is a wonderful thing to do if you're of a certain age, but my 7-year-old shouldn't have the car keys. It's what we know is that the brain of a child develops into their early 20s, and what we're seeing is that the effects are more pronounced the younger the child is when they get to screen. So the kids that are better able to handle balanced screen time are the ones who got devices at an older age into adolescence. For example, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, the Google founders, were Montessori students who had no screen devices till they were through high school. Jeff Bezos was a Montessori student, no screen time when he was a kid. So we're seeing that the kids who have the better outcomes are the ones who get devices later.
Well, can you give me a timeline then? I mean, I heard from a teacher parent earlier today who was saying that, you know, the kid in grade 4, her child, I guess, has a device as well. I mean, they want to be tethered to their kids, I guess, through this device. But I thought that was a little young. Where would you draw the line when you would impose restrictions, say, for parental guidance?
Yeah, here in the States, there's a very popular wait until eighth movement, waiting until eighth grade, 13 years old. That's a good metric, I think. You know, 13th is beginning to be where you can start experimenting. Anything under 13, when you're, you know, it's a shame when you see a 2-year-old in the crib with a tablet in their face, you're cognitively delaying that child. There's so much research about the developmental delays, ADHD effects, anxiety, depression. You know, parents have drank the Kool-Aid that somehow their kids will be behind the digital arms race if they don't have a tablet, you know, in utero. And they're moving younger and younger ages, but they're doing the exact opposite. The earlier your child is that you give them a device, the more that you're stunting their development and potentially harming them.
Okay, so
it's a good starting point.
You're saying, yeah, about age 13, even though people mature at different, but at 13, grade 8 would be about, you know, the most, I guess, obvious delineation then.
Yeah, it is an individual thing. Some kids are more vulnerable than others. If you already have a baseline mental health issues, if you're already prone towards depression, if you're on the spectrum, we know that kids who are any kind of Asperger's or spectrum disorders are much more likely to get sucked into digital addiction or digital escapism. So, you know, if your child has a healthy, balanced childhood and they play sports and they play music and they're avid readers, those kids tend to have a better chance to have a balanced digital life. The kids who tend to have other issues also tend to be comorbid with developing a problem with their digital devices.
Let me ask you, I mean, are you getting the sense sometimes that you're shoveling sand against the tide in this battle to enlighten? I mean, where's the CDC on this? Where, you know, any big government agency that could be warning? Or is it a losing battle that they've basically capitulated?
5 years ago, you would have had me. That was definitely swimming against the tide, and my wife didn't want to be around me in my more depressing days when I felt that we were definitely fighting a losing battle. But what I'm very encouraged by is, like, I'm currently involved here in the States. We have two large class action lawsuits against the social media companies, against the gaming industry, effectively asking or suing, not just for damages, but there's several hundred plaintiff families whose kids have committed suicide because of TikTok No, because essentially social media, the algorithms act like heat-seeking missiles that find psychological vulnerabilities. So if you're an adolescent female who has body image issues, you're going to get bombarded with negative body image issues. If you're a depressed young man, you're going to get content that's exacerbating that. So the class action lawsuits that are following the Big Tobacco playbook are not only asking for damages to the families that have been harmed, but they're also asking for industry-wide changes like warning labels and more parental controls. And so that combined with a growing grassroots awakening, I think people are realizing that we all drank the Kool-Aid a few years ago because we were all starstruck by our fancy gizmos that we didn't quite realize how they were affecting our little ones until it was a little bit too late. But I'm definitely seeing movement now. People are definitely saying, stop harming our kids.
So you're the eternal optimist here, Doctor. As a matter of fact, when in your book's subtitle, How to Restore Our Sanity, is that part of what you've just alluded to?
Well, the big part of it, you know, I do say that the solution to the modern is the ancient. And what I mean by that is we have certain skills and abilities, and I use a philosopher warrior archetype. And what I mean by that is if you look at the archetype of what an ancient philosopher used to do, they used to have this skill, this thing that you and I probably rarely see in kids anymore. It was called critical thinking. And so if we can help our children develop a sense of critical thinking, ethical discernment, that's the philosopher part. The warrior part is our kids have become very fragile. Screen time has made our kids soft as jelly in terms of resilience and grit. And so encouraging our kids to not live in this instant gratification world, but to teach them to fall down, scrape their knee, and how to get back up. And so it's grit, resilience, and critical thinking are the two immunizers against all this. I call it developing a child's healthy psychological immune system against some of these viral attacks that are really targeted towards them.
And their vulnerabilities, as you said, which they just amplify. Very, very informative and enlightening. I really appreciate your time. I hope we'll talk down the road.
Absolutely. And thank you for talking about this topic. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Dr. Nicholas Cardaris, psychologist, expert on mental health and addiction, and author of the book Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity. Really love that end part. He is so correct about that. There's like a generational divide right along that rift line. But we'll continue on. Let me start with Ian first off, Oakley Show, 640 Toronto. Ian, good afternoon.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm all right, Ian. You?
I'm doing okay. Thank you.
You're a teacher.
I am a teacher. And you know what? I've never had a problem with this at all. For 20 years, I've seen this sort of, you know, thing grow. The scenario with cell phones. Now, I teach media art. I teach visual arts, photography, and whatnot. And they need to use their cell phone as a tool. But we all buy shoes. And with your shoes that you buy, you get a shoebox. And I have a shoebox. It's right beside my desk. And I collect them. As soon as they come to class, it gets collected. Normally, they just go and they put it in the box. If it's not in the box, I'll say, hey, so-and-so, put it in the box. Not a problem at all. There is no problem at all whatsoever. I see more and more ADHD happening. It just exacerbates the whole scenario as well, having these distractions. So they do not learn when they have these devices, and they can be used for good things, but if it's going to be abused, then you know what? It's back in the box, and you're not getting it.
Where are you teaching?
I teach at private schools. And I got to tell you right now, some schools have different policies. And what I do is I sit down with administration right off the bat. If I sign a contract, they'll say, okay, where are you on this? And then I'll pitch, well, can I have an isolated scenario where I can have this as a rule within my class, yay or nay? And it could actually be a make or break because I'm not going to teach a bunch of students that are so wildly distracted by these device. And as I said, if it's a policy, that's that. And in a private school, if it's going to affect your marks, all you have to say is, you know what, this could be 20% taken off of communication.
Well, you know, and this is good. Ian, I appreciate that because you're forthright when it comes to wanting to know what the policy is, establishing it going in, and implementing it consistently. Not everybody would approach it as you do, and therein lies part of the dilemma, to my mind.
And exactly. And I was talking to Mike about this. You cannot be, not your job to be a teacher and to be a friend. The fact is, there's empowerment here. And that means that there is a separation between you, the teacher, and the students. Doesn't mean that you can't be jovial. But what it means is that you are there to evaluate. You're there to make anecdotal notes. You're there to set them up for their future. But you're not their friend. Okay?
Amen.
You're not their buddy.
Good.
No.
Good to know, Ian. I appreciate it. I mean, this is really the template for successful teaching, I believe. Appreciate it, Ian. Stay well. Good luck.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Let's keep it moving. We've got teachers on the line. Tim's and Simcoe up next. Oakley Show, 640 Toronto, Tim. Good afternoon, Tim.
Oh, hi. How's it going?
Pretty good. What do you make of this policy now? How would you deal with it as a teacher?
Well, like I said, we've always had the power to use our professional judgment on the use of phones in the classroom. That's never been an issue. You know, some teachers did always implement saying they cannot be out. Like myself, I teach marketing, where we do make TikToks, we do make, use photography and Instagram posts and such forth. So there is a time and a place for it. But what the ban does, at least it provides the public information that, no, they are banned in the classroom, and then, you know, ultimately we will have our professional judgment. And, you know, I teach in the public school system. Yeah, you're not going to take that phone away, and you shouldn't. I mean, it's a $1,500 device, and we all know that if you drop that, crack a screen. But at least now you say, okay, guys, put it away. And if a kid does have it out when it's not an appropriate time, then you're not following the guidelines set forth in the classroom, and you need to go to the office and remove from the classroom.
Have you ever done that to a student?
For an actual cell phone after telling them to put it away?
Yeah.
No. But, you know, you send kids down when they're not listening to the teacher, because really, by law, a student with appropriate instruction and students have to listen to the teacher if it's within reason. And so now that it's a ban, so, you know, phones need to be out while you're working on this. And if the phones do come out, then, you know, Charlie, you know, put it away if they have it out. No, sir, I'm just going to text my mom. Okay, that's fine, but put it away. And I'm sure that'll be fine. Okay. But again, we're going to have to use our professional judgment, but we shouldn't be taking it away. You're going to put yourself into a, you know, precarious position. Like,
well, we're not talking about taking it away. We're just talking about parking it so they don't have access to it during classroom time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but some teachers will abide by that. You know, they'll allow the students liberties, which to my mind is counterproductive. And we ought to stop that. I just don't think these teachers are going about it the right way if they're allowing for this. I don't understand where the phone would... I mean, unless it's really related to the instruction, there should be no use of a phone in the classroom setting. Am I wrong?
Well, it's difficult because a lot of teachers are restricted with access to information, even modern textbooks and stuff like that. And so with all the new online learning and or blended learning... We've had to kind of use our phones as even research tools because there's not always access to Chromebooks and other computers in the classroom. Like, I teach in a computer classroom. Now when a computer breaks down, IT just comes and takes it out. Well, I've got 28 kids in a class. I had 28 computers. Now I got 26 or 27. Now I've got 24. And so there's a lot more to the problem than people realize when it comes to all this.
Well, look, the point, I guess what I'm really drilling down on is if it's the misuse of phones in the classroom setting. And we're going to be talking to an expert who's written the book, as I said earlier, Glow Kids. They're so addicted to these devices that sometimes the teacher is competing with the entertainment value and the addictive nature of digital drugs like TikTok, and that ain't fair to the teacher. That's my point. And I'm trying to take the side of the teacher who might be placed in a difficult situation having to take it from the kids. And so we'll see what the outcome will be. But in the States, there have been various reports of kids going ballistic on the teacher. I just don't want to see that happen here. But I appreciate it. You seem like you've got a controlled environment, Tim and Simcoe. Want to hear from more teachers with this new policy to be implemented in the fall and why we're late to the dance in terms of this. When Stephen Lecce is indicting the Toronto District School Board for not having enacted a policy sooner, he's not wrong. Let's go to Marnie next in Toronto. Marnie, I appreciate your waiting. Good afternoon, Oakley Show.
Hi, great day for talk radio.
Sure is. Marnie, what do you got?
So I actually am a core French teacher in the elementary panel, and I work in Toronto for the Toronto Catholic District School Board. And we do this right now. So I teach kids from grade 1 to 8, and the classroom teachers will have a place that's locked up. It's one of those shoe bags where you can put shoes in. Well, instead, we have their names. They put their phones in. And then at the end of the day, if we're not using it for instructional use, we hand them back. My concern as a teacher would be if they did get a stolen or broken, who is responsible? So that would be what I think our minister would have to give us a better understanding. But it's going on in the classroom and the kids get it.
Well, wait a minute. And the kids get it. What do you mean? They're actually adhering to the policy. They're just complying. There's no fuss, no muss. I mean, so maybe this is a solution looking for a problem.
They are complying. Now, the odd time they won't hand them in and you see their head down and they're playing games often or, you know, some cheat using them. I know my daughter in high school, that's what she's saying that kids do. So if it's not taken away, there is cheating going on through assessments, but my guys in the elementary are playing games.
How old are your guys in elementary?
Up till grade 8.
How young with cell phones?
Grade 4. So 9 years old and up usually have phones.
Mm. Boy,
not always data. They have Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah. Okay. You know, I have a problem with that as well. I don't think anybody under the age of like 14 ought to have a cell phone, but that's just me. Because, you know, just having read numerous accounts of why this is detrimental to their mental well-being, et cetera, that be that as it may, I don't know who's allowing for this, but that's another story, parental guidance, et cetera.
That's my other point is at 2:45 before the bell rings, my kids are getting phone calls from their parents and they're telling me they have to answer the phone. And I say, no, I'm sorry. You know, they can call the office. So parents are messaging their kids as well. And that's going to be a new learning. And I myself am guilty of that. I have texted my son during the day hoping he'll get back to me. But I, you know, if he doesn't, I understand he shouldn't be. But, and I'm a teacher. So, yep.
Wait a minute. Okay, he shouldn't be, but you're texting him anyway. So, I mean, he feels compelled to answer, and he doesn't. Okay, so his wisdom is rather impressive in this regard. I don't understand. I mean, in the States, one of the reasons cited, get this, for the kids needing cell phones, in case there's a school shooting, they got to get in touch with their parents. How sad is that a commentary? In case there's a school shooting, because the incidents of such are now so prevalent. You know, it's just a crapshoot. Maybe your school will get shot up.
From my cold, dead hand.
Or put into lockdown. Anyway, okay, Marnie, you're saying it's not an issue where you're concerned. And so, but somebody is complaining about this. I think there's a valid reason to be concerned. And if you've got a blanket policy, good. But it's the implementation, as I keep saying, that I've got most concern with, but you wouldn't have any issue. You impose it and they comply. So there's no friction. There's no conflict. You're not in danger of being pepper sprayed by a grade 4 student. All right. But we'll continue on. You know, he talks about addiction. People who are addicted to smoking, will they be deterred by the latest? We'll come back in a moment. More Oakley, 640 Toronto.
For cannabis, we put it in specialty stores. For cigarettes, we should not be selling it in convenience stores and gas stations.
Here he is, John Oakley.
That was just a foretaste, a little sampler, because today is the day where we're seeing individual cigarettes marked with warning labels or slogans, I guess. Things like poison in every puff. Cigarettes damage organs. Mace cannot penetrate Vaseline. I before E except after C. Oh, no, maybe not that one. Or not the one before. But you see, that's the idea. Now, will this have any impact? I don't know. The idea, this is where the person who was, I guess, promoting this was saying it's likened to cannabis and cigarette selling. I would guess cigars would be the same thing. You know, I mean, there are restrictions already to a certain extent, but it should be sold, as is the case with cannabis, not in convenience stores or gas stations. So you know where they will buy them?
The Reserve.
Exactly. The smoke shacks on the Reserve. This is just driving people to the black market, gray market, whatever you want to call it, the contraband.
Oh, Lord, we're going backward now. Special stores for liquor. Special stores for vaping. Special places where you're allowed to gamble. Now they're putting, they want to put cigarettes in their own special store.
Yeah.
Ontario is moving backward. The country's moving backward. And it's not going to deter smokers.
I don't think so. I mean, when you've got a Jones for a ciggy, you know, lighting up a dart, it doesn't matter, except that price point will lead people to go to the smoke shacks. We've seen this when, oh, this is going back 25 years ago. Kretschmann administration brought in heavy ciggy taxes, well, sin taxes in general. And so all it did was drive people underground. They went to the smoke shack. He had to lift that tax because it was counterproductive. They were assuming they were going to tax at a certain level or rate and reap the windfall, but it didn't happen because it drove people underground.
Yeah, and the $6 bag cigarettes? Ah, delicious. Once you, it's an acquired taste.
Delicious.
But, and one of the side benefits of this is that nobody wants to bum smokes off of you.
Well, that's
because
good.
They taste terrible.
They don't have filters, do they?
They have filters, you'll find like a whole twig in there. And it's like, what plant is this from? Right. Dennis Leary covered this in the 90s.
Yes.
He was on about this, if you remember this bit.
Mm. He wants to make the warnings on the packs bigger. Yeah. He wants the whole front of the pack to be the warning. Like, the problem is we just haven't noticed yet, right? Like, he's going to get his way, and all of a sudden, smokers around the world are going to be going, yeah, Bill, I've got some cigarettes. Holy shit! These things are bad for you! I thought they were good for you. I thought they had vitamin C in them and stuff. Doesn't matter how big the warnings are. You could have cigarettes that were called warnings. You could have cigarettes that come in a black pack with a skull and a crossbone on the front called tumors. And smokers will be lined up around the block going, I can't wait to get my hands on these things. I bet you get a tumor as soon as you light up. Nom, 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 nom.
That's very memorable.
Prophetic.
Right. Yes. Yes. Dennis Leary. I almost said Bill Hicks, and that would have been apropos, too. So anyway, the point is, the cigarette labeling thing is, to my mind, you know, it's just performative. But it's got no real efficacy because cigarette smokers are going to go and get their ciggies regardless. As you said, you know, you'll even buy stuff with twigs in them. Just, you know, you get the nicotine rush. And that's that. So I can't really tell you that there's a cost to fix to this. It's just misguided messaging. You might as well put aphorisms down there that you'd see on fridge magnets and other such. Might as well, right? I before E, except after C. A little grammar being taught to the students or anybody who's smoking, you know, in the high school year.
Well, it's like if you get your plastic jug plunk and there's a warning on this. Drinking this will make you drunk. Well, I sure hope so.
Right.
Thanks.
Well, okay. Look, I want to be socially responsible, so not you, but me. I'll issue the caveat. Smoking's not good for you.
No, smoking, that's the point. Everybody knows this. It's terrible.
I know, but you're citing how delicious these smoke shack ciggies are. I mean, delicious.
I am not a doctor. I am not a doctor.
No, okay. Really, it's like something you would advocate on the Food Network. Delicious. Never heard that ascribed to a cigarette. All right.
And you won't. They're gross.
There you go. Okay. There you go. You've rehabilitated yourself.
Oh, I thought it was obvious. Anyone who's had those bag smokes, you know what I'm talking about.
Right. All right. Well, but again, you know, and the roll your owns, you know, with the little contraption there, you put the papers in, the Vogue papers. Remember those back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Dad used to smoke those. He'd roll his own, you know, like 20, and you'd get the loose leaf tobacco in, what was it, the players?
Bag.
The players.
Yep.
No, it was
or
in the
drum.
Tin. The tin can. Yeah.
Yeah,
anyway, I guess. And they were unfiltered.
Listen to the John Oakley Show live each weekday afternoon from 3 until 6. If you live in the Toronto area, just turn that AM dial to 640 and listen anywhere on earth 24 hours a day by going to 640toronto.com. Follow on Twitter at @AM640Oakley. You've been listening to A Curious Cast. New podcasts and shows are debuting all the time. So check back often to see what's new in the Curious Cast Library.